Okay, let's begin, please. We'll resume the title board meeting. The time is 2:22 p.m. We are running behind schedule, but hopefully we can get back on track. The first agenda item is 2007-2008 number 82, discrimination, preferential treatment by Colorado governments. Just by way of background, though, I should, for the record, explain that the title board this afternoon, again, my name is Bill Hobbs, and then to my right is Dan Domenico. The change in title board membership this afternoon from this morning is that Dan Carton is now sitting as the designee of the director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services. Again, just make sure I hit the basics on procedures. The sign-up sheets on the table by the door for anybody who wishes to testify. For new measures like this afternoon's agenda, we will follow three steps. Basically, make sure we understand the measures by asking questions of proponents. Number two, determine if the measure, each of the measures complies with a single subject requirement. And number three, if it does, then we'll proceed to work on setting titles based on a staff-prepared draft, which is on the table. With that, then, let's turn to number 82, and I'd like to hear from proponents first and see if the board has questions for the proponents. Ms. Hart, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you today? Busy. Obviously, this is not the first time I've been here, or the first time I've been here on this subject, which I think is a single subject. Also last time, think so this time. I guess if I don't have that much to say about proposed initiative 82, other than that I think it's been written to encompass and discuss a single subject, that is the subject of the state's non-discrimination obligation. And in a clear and straightforward and brief manner that will be easily understood by any voter.
Let me ask a couple of questions. And some of this may just be trying to warm up the brain cells here again, and some of it is replowing probably small ground. But I really want to make sure I understand what the measure does, what effect it has on current law. And I want to understand that by comparing kind of the first sentence with the second sentence. And we've done this before, but I would like to know, again, maybe this is repetitious, but I'd like to know from the proponent's perspective, how does the first sentence change the law currently? I mean, I ask because I think some forms of discrimination are already prohibited. So I'm trying to find out how that first sentence changes current law. Mm-hmm. And then I want to know how the second sentence, the definition of preferential treatment, impacts that. And I don't know, maybe this is the third question. Then I want to know, okay, when the smoke clears and you read the two sentences together, what is the effect of this measure?
All right, so focusing on obviously the first paragraph of post initiative number 82, which is the bulk of the substantive provision. What the first sentence does is it makes clear and makes a clear statement in the Colorado Constitution that discrimination and preferential treatment, and of course that is preferential treatment as defined in this section because that is a term that is subject to many definitions. There is not a single definition of preferential treatment, which is why a definition is important, but discrimination and preferential treatment is illegal under the Colorado Constitution. Mr. Hobbs, you ask how this changes the law. To some extent, I think the answer is discrimination and preferential treatment are currently illegal. And so to some extent, I don't think it does do a huge amount to change the law. I think what it does do is it makes that a clear part of the Colorado Constitution, which it is not necessarily now, and it allows the voters to affirm strongly that that is what they want the law to be under the Colorado Constitution. So, and importantly, to the extent that there are voters who believe that the law still permits, in particular, quotas and awarding points on the basis of race, et cetera, it allows those voters to clearly state their intent that that not be true. And again, I don't think quotas and preferential treatment point systems are legally permissible, but to the extent that there are people out there who are in decision-making positions who believe that they are and who are acting in that way, this will make clear that they are not that is not acceptable. So I think the two sentences together, I don't think the second sentence can be understood as changing the first sentence. The second sentence offers a definition of preferential treatment. So the two have to work together. The proponents of this initiative believe that discrimination is and should be clearly stated as illegal. That includes preferential treatment defined as quotas and awarding points solely on the basis of race, gender, color, ethnicity, or national origin.
Okay, so let me see if I'm, and forgive me for being slow here, but I just want to make sure I understand this. You're saying, okay, basically discrimination against these groups for those reasons is already illegal. This would constitutionalize that. I'm not sure the right word, clarify or provide that the prohibition also applies generally to granting preferential treatment to those groups on those bases as well, but the definition of preferential treatment is intended to make clear that the kinds of preferential treatment that are prohibited are those that involve quotas or points that favor one of those groups or someone, a member of the group, basically.
As defined in this section, again, very clearly, preferential treatment means quotas or awarding point system.
Okay.
Or systems that are awarding points. Sorry, systems.
So what is left? And this may be an unfair question to you. What is left where voters might think, okay, what kinds of preferential treatment might be that people might think of without this definition? Again, I'm just going to ask directly for affirmative action, for example. I don't know what that means necessarily, but can you help me understand kind of in the real world what we're left with?
Sure. Again, I mean, obviously, there's on the one hand, I feel strongly that proposed Initiative 82 has to be judged on its own merits as addressing this single subject and doing so clearly. On the other hand, we all are obviously aware of the fact that Initiative 31 is now going likely to be on the ballot. And so one of the strong reasons that the proponents of this initiative felt it was important to put forward a ban on discrimination that included an actual definition of preferential treatment is because of the absence of definition and the intent to confuse over the definition in 31. And the issue that is at stake here, and I think it's clear, is that there are some things that some people would define as preferential treatment, but that other people would not define as preferential treatment. And what this initiative is trying to do is to say, here is specifically what we mean by preferential treatment. Here is what we're talking about when we're talking about preferential treatment. So the kinds of programs that might otherwise be seen as preferential treatment, programs like targeted recruiting, programs like camps or other programs that are designed to encourage girls to go into maths and sciences, programs that attempt to either remedy past discrimination in appropriate instances or to ensure a broad range of opportunity to all of Colorado citizens are not swept up in an overbroad and deceptive definition of preferential treatment. Instead, there is a clear definition and people will know what's included and therefore what is excluded. So if when you say affirmative action, if what you mean is recruiting programs, I do not think that under this initiative that would be preferential treatment. Those are not quotas or point systems.
Okay. Other questions for Ms. Hart? Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple questions. Okay. In practice, do you see this as doing anything different than your last measure, 61? Would it, in practice, accomplish the same thing?
I think that they are substantially the same. I'm sure that there are lawyers out there in the universe who could argue about some differences, some differences between the two. But what this is, I mean, honestly, and again, you were there too. So at the rehearing on Initiative 61, the board made clear that in your view, Initiative 61 was going to be confusing to voters because the language did require some knowledge of what the Supreme Court's doctrine was, because there might be debate about what the Supreme Court's doctrine is. And so taking seriously what you said, that we needed to work on language that was, in your view, less confusing, the proponents that I'm working with went back and said, okay, let's find a way to say clearly what we're doing here. And that's what this is. It's very clear. And I think to a large extent, again, is really doing the same thing, which is preserving equal opportunity programs while making clear that discrimination and preferential treatment are illegal in Colorado.
Right. And I appreciate that. This does resolve one of the problems that I had and some others had with 61, which was it was hard to figure out really what the sort of incorporation by reference of all the Supreme Court decisions, how that actually would play out. And so this does resolve that. And I guess that's one difference, is even if this accurately would capture how things would play out under currently existing Supreme Court precedent, this wouldn't change the way it would work depending on Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court shifted its doctrine a little bit one way or the other. But there's also another problem with 61 that I'm not sure this does resolve, and I appreciate the effort to do this, but as I understand it, the reason you feel this is necessary is because this first sentence, or things very similar to it, when they've been adopted in other places, have generally been interpreted to prohibit much more than your definition. When the courts get into analyzing preferential treatment, that language, when not accompanied by a definition like this, is used to prevent states and local governments from doing a lot more than this measure would prevent, right? I mean, and so the problem then is that what you've got is basically the first sentence that says that generally is interpreted as saying the state cannot do X, Y, and Z. And then you've got a second sentence that, in a clearer way this time, still says the state can do X and Y, but not Z, or something like that. And there's still kind of an underlying conflict between the two. And so I wonder why it is you think you can't accomplish your goal without using the same language from the first sentence. Do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely know what you're saying. And with respect to Mr. Domenico, I absolutely disagree with your characterization of the two sentences as in conflict with each other. The first sentence uses terms that are subject to multiple interpretations. The second sentence provides a definition for the most contentious term in the first sentence. In doing that, it is trying to be not surprising, not confusing, not misleading, not deceptive. We're trying to be clear about what we're doing here, unlike other initiatives that have used the same language without definition and have been sold to the public as doing something entirely different from what they're then interpreted to do. What we're doing here is very clear. And using the first sentence is important to the proponents of this initiative because they believe in that. They believe in everything written in this initiative. What they want to do is to offer the voters an opportunity in Colorado to say, we do not want or approve of discrimination or preferential treatment by our state or its, et cetera, subdivisions, and this is what we mean when we say that. When we say no discrimination, no preferential treatment, what we mean is no quotas and no awarding points. And so there's no question, there's no possibility that some people voting for this will think they're voting for one thing and other people will think they're voting for another thing, as there very much has been in the case of of the other initiative. In this case, it's very clear what people are voting for. It is very straightforward. I think the idea that because there's a definition of preferential treatment, it is therefore in conflict, is really troubling, because it's well demonstrated and documented that there's a lot of different points of view about what preferential treatment means, what would constitute preferential treatment, and what would not. And so defining it is an important part of what this initiative does, but prohibiting it is equally important. Prohibiting what is defined as preferential treatment is what this initiative seeks to do.
And I appreciate that. And the struggle I have, though, is that the point of this, as you said, is to make sure that certain forms of equal opportunity programs that don't involve point systems or quotas are preserved. And also to make sort of a general statement that we don't approve of discrimination or preferential treatment at the same time. And I don't have any problem with the idea that you should be able to do both of those things. The problem is that the way this is phrased, the first sentence is stated as a blanket prohibition that is generally interpreted, and the reason for including this is because you're understanding that without this definition, it's likely to be interpreted in number 31 or elsewhere as prohibiting things that you want to preserve in it. And so you're probably right that saying they conflict is not quite accurate. But there's still that same fundamental tension, it seems to me, between a first sentence that is generally interpreted to mean one thing and a second sentence that says, don't interpret this in the usual way.
Well, and again, I just have to, I apologize for interrupting, but I can't let it stand there that it is generally interpreted in a particular way. That's, again, I think it is not true that preferential treatment is generally interpreted in a particular way. It is being argued in a particular way in a number of states, and people are nervous about, I mean, of course, any law, once you have any law passed, there's going to be sort of a shadow of things that the states are hesitant to do because they want to be careful not to break the law, and so it has far-reaching effects because of its lack of clarity. That doesn't mean that everyone understands preferential treatment to mean a certain thing. In fact, people don't all understand preferential treatment to mean a certain thing, which is why there has to be a definition.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I do think, though, that it's that in this context, when included in this same basic sentence that has been enacted in other states and in 31, there's not certainly not universal, but general understanding that things that you want to preserve are prohibited. And I just this is just a really hard one for me, because I really wish that you had brought us something that didn't use that same first sentence, that even though I understand why you want to, and I don't ascribe any ill motives to why the proponents are doing it that way, it would be much easier for me if this was a little bit cleaner on its own statement, saying nothing in the Colorado Constitution shall be interpreted to prohibit the state or any state agency from engaging in whatever you want to preserve the right to engage in.
Well, Mr. Demeco, I understand that would be also a proposal that someone could bring forward. That's not what the proponents of this initiative are seeking to do. I think to say that the only thing the proponents of this initiative are seeking to do is to preserve some core of equal opportunity programs is to misunderstand the purposes of this initiative. This initiative is intended to be a statement that Coloradans can get behind about what we think the state's non-discrimination obligation is. And that includes both an obligation not to discriminate and an obligation not to engage in these forms of preferential treatment. And so to eliminate the first sentence would be to not do what the proponents are seeking to do. And they chose this language because it did both things, because it ensured a clear statement that we are opposed to discrimination and preferential treatment, and then a clear definition of what preferential treatment is. Both things are essential to what the proponents are seeking to do. So while the approach you described would have been one someone could have taken, I think the question before the title board today needs to be on its face, the four corners of this document. Is this clear, and is this a single subject? And on the face of this document, it's absolutely clear, it's absolutely a single subject, and this is the goal that the proponents have, to do both of these things and to do them in this clear and straightforward manner.
Are there other questions? I mean, we're getting into, I think, and it's fine to be getting into some of the single subject issues as well. I just want to make sure that we've taken advantage of the opportunity to find out any questions we have from the proponents and before we formally move into that. And I don't know, maybe since we should just go ahead and talk about single subject, I'd like to find out maybe if somebody else wants to testify on the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject issue. And actually, I only have one other person signed up, Roberto Carrata, but I think you're on the side of this being a single subject, I think. Okay. So it looks like I don't have anyone signed up to testify that in opposition to the measure complying with the single subject requirement. That being the case, let's just go ahead and turn to board discussion about whether the measure does comply with the single subject requirement. And I will say, you know, and so far based on the discussion that I've heard, I tend to to be honest with you, I've waffled back and forth since the first time I saw this draft, but where I am right now is, I think, consistent with what Ms. Hart said, is that basically this is a lot like number 31, and I hate to bring that up too, but I think as far as understanding what number 31 means and what this measure means, it's helpful, because we struggled with number 31. What does it mean? But I think this is a prohibition on discrimination that, like number 31, includes in the concept of discrimination not only discrimination against groups but discrimination in favor of groups, and to some degree it's like number 31 we're proposing here to constitutionalize a lot of jurisprudence that's just really already out there, but that's like number 31, I think. So again, it's a prohibition on discrimination both for and against groups, but it simply defines preferential treatment. The difference is defining preferential treatment to mean something, I think, a little more limited than there could be other definitions. I think the proponents of number 31, I think, have a broader definition. But I can't see that it's misleading the definition that's here. It seems to me that's what the proponents can do. I think at this point, it seems to me that this is a single subject. And I do appreciate, actually, some of the things that Mr. Domenico is saying about there might have been a more direct route to the result that this measure probably achieves or proposes to achieve. But the fact that a measure might be drafted more directly, I don't know that that's necessarily carries the day. It seems like a lot like number 31. I think it probably is a single subject.
Well, I too have gone back and forth since I saw it, and As I tried to say, this does resolve one of the problems that caused me to vote against 61, but there's still, it effectively does the same thing, and the fundamental problem that I had with 61, I think, although I'm not sure, I'm still going back and forth, is still here, which is that the first sentence says X, and then the second sentence says not X. And I appreciate the argument that it's not quite that clean, that it's really more of the second sentence is trying to define X as opposed to saying not X. But at the same time, it does seem to me when you have a blanket prohibition that is typically interpreted one way, to include that rather than, and then try to define it a different way, is fundamentally different than a term that really is totally undefined. And I don't know, I'm probably going to vote in favor of it today, but I don't feel comfortable with it for that reason, that there still seems to be a conflict between saying a blanket prohibition and then basically we didn't mean that to be a blanket prohibition. And that's sort of how it seems in effect to be, even if that's not, even if, I mean, I perfectly understand that what the proponents are saying is that this is what preferential treatment really means, and it's just misinterpreted by some people, so we want to make it clear. But I don't know. I think that there's the same fundamental difficulty with this as with 61 in some ways. But I think I'm going to vote in favor of it for now.
Any other discussion?
I wouldn't have anything to add to your reasoning, Mr. Chairman. I didn't sit for 61. I did sit for 31. Again, based on your analysis, your reasoning, I concur with that. I don't have anything to add, and I think there's a single subject.
I'll go ahead and move then that the board find that that number 82 comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's look at the staff drafts. Ms. Gomez has displayed the staff draft on the screen in the room. Ms. Hart, if you had a chance to look at the staff draft, do you have
yes,
any comments?
I have. And I do actually have a comment about the staff draft, although I think it does, in my view, it does accurately express the purpose of the single subject of the initiative. I have some concern about it, again, in light of the discussion on Initiative 61, and particularly given the date. I don't want to end up in a situation where a title gets set and is argued before the Supreme Court to contain an impermissible catchphrase, and I am concerned that equal opportunity might be something that, although I don't think it's an equal opportunity catchphrase, I don't think it's an impermissible catchphrase. I think it's clear. It strikes me, having looked at the catchphrase cases, as the sort of thing that could present a problem, and so, or at least give an argument. So I guess I would prefer to suggest to the board that you consider setting a title something like an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the state's obligation not to discriminate, and in connection therewith, et cetera. And in suggesting that, I just want to say I intentionally differed the language slightly from the language that you set in the title for Initiative 31, because I think that was a concern that was raised at the board last time, and that they were identical, and I don't want to again get into that trouble. So it struck me that something like concerning the state's obligation not to discriminate or considering the state's non-discrimination obligation would express what the single subject was.
thank you. I appreciate that. I'm very troubled by the staff draft, you know, just using the phrase equal opportunity. I do think that seems like a catchphrase to me. And I also appreciate that it would be preferable, I think, to have a title that more clearly up front distinguishes this measure from number 31. I don't know whether that's the right approach, but, you know, in some ways logically, based on what I said before about comparing this measure to number 31, it ought to be a very similar title to number 31.
And I think they do, in fact, address the same single subject, which is mm-hmm. the state's non-discrimination obligation and how you're going to define it.
Yeah, number 31 says, concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state. That's the expression of single subject. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to explain, prohibits the state from discriminating against or granting preferential treatment. I mean, we could do a title very similar to that, I'm assuming.
I mean,
but
to me, after the opening phrase, everything in the title as proposed by the staff is it basically tracks the language of our proposed initiative exactly, and it seems, again, very clear to me. It has the clear definition of preferential treatment. I think it would be very clear to anyone reading it what it's intended to do. It's just that first part that struck me.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect the drafter really was, in all good faith, just simply trying to distinguish it. And it's from the point of view of proponents, I think, it's a good phrase.
Right. Well, and in fact, in fairness to the staff drafter, who in our language, we do have the heading equal opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I can understand how that would be in the title. I just think perhaps it shouldn't.
And I don't have any feeling about what to do about it, right off. I just don't like the phrase equal opportunity from the catchphrase perspective. I like it as far as distinguishing it right up front from number 31. But
it seems to me that it might not be a bad idea, actually, to use the same single subject statement as 31. In that, in a roundabout way, it might help alleviate some of the potential confusion having two very similar proposals that treat the same subject differently. If people read two titles that start out the exact same way, they may, in fact, be encouraged to read further to see which one they prefer, or both, potentially. Whereas if they're different, if we try to kind of artificially create a difference between the subject, then people may say, well, I'm in favor of both of these without going any further. So in a strange way, using the same language may actually be helpful in encouraging people to look carefully at where the differences are. And if there is a single subject, I think it is basically the same what it is, what it means to prohibit discrimination. That would be my suggestion. Consider, at least.
Well, I think that's point well taken. Maybe there's a benefit. I mean, these are very similar measures. I mean, they depart in a significant way, but they basically do say practically the same thing, at least in the opening clause.
Well, I mean, we could have written a more specific single subject statement for 31, but not having done so, it seems to me that it may be helpful to voters to signal to them that these two generally are about the same concept.
Mr. Carton was pointing out, I mean, you know, I was trying to figure out, again, number 31 versus number 61, or 82 now, sorry, that this, Mr. Carton points out that one thing that we need to think about is that the statute 1-40-106 in subsection 3B says that ballot titles shall be brief, shall not conflict with those selected for any petition previously filed for the same election. And I'm don't know exactly what that means, what it means for titles to conflict. I don't know if the titles are the same. We've always, I think, sort of assumed in a way that if they're the same, they conflict, where they have different meanings.
I feel that I should have brought the cases I had found on this with me, and of course I didn't. But there are some cases from the Supreme Court about the question of conflicting ballot initiatives. And the general rule that the court has set out is that in a situation like this where the question of conflict is one of interpretation, that's something for the courts to decide later, and that both titles can be set. So the only case law that's out there about that does not suggest that it's never, I mean, again, there's just a couple of cases, but they seem to suggest that that where it's an interpretive question, that's to be decided later. If the voter could reasonably vote for each one, then it's possible to have them on the ballot.
Well, and help me, and I know I'm putting you on the spot because you didn't bring the cases, but from what you can recall or from maybe what you're saying, can you tell me how the titles for two different ballot measures can conflict? I'm just hung up on conflict.
It's
what the statute means.
That's a reasonable thing to.
They're obviously different. I mean, most measures.
Right. Again, I apologize. I didn't
maybe admit. You know, Mr. Kneiser, I think probably has some insight on this that perhaps you could get some input from him as well.
Yeah. Basically, I think the cases that Ms. Hart was referring to, where there are two ballot measures that make it to the ballot and cover the same subject but have conflicting outcomes, then the court will do one of two things. It'll try to reconcile them, and if it can't reconcile them, then it will give the one that has the most votes, it'll determine that that's the one that's valid. I think what this particular provision is referring to is to make sure that the ballot titles are not written in the same way. So when you have a measures dealing with the same subject, so that the people would not be confused as to what they were voting on. And so to the extent that you have measures like 31 and potentially this measure, if you have the statement of the single subject that's the same, I think there's an argument that that may be confusing to individuals, and they won't know exactly what they are voting on. So the idea is that if they cover the same subject, you want to word it in a way so that people can distinguish between the conflicting or the different
Although,
titles.
Mr. Kneiser, you struck a chord in my memory, which is the issue in the cases was that there has to be language in the titles that makes it clear so that the voter can clearly distinguish. And the examples that were given, again, since the title is the entire thing, I think given that the clear distinction between the two is contained in this case, the definition of preferential treatment, and in the case of Mr. Connerly's initiative, there are sort of panoply of exceptions that are all listed in the title, so that if you were to read both titles, it would in fact be clear what the differences are. And I think the case law is just that the title, it has to state what the difference is, which if this were the title with the change to the beginning, it would do that, since the definition is clearly in this title.
The one case I think that comes to mind, this was years ago, is one of the gambling initiatives where the issue was whether or not the title itself was clear. And there was a question as to the order that the title board listed certain items. And the court said, you know, there were certain items within the measure that were more important than others, and those really had to be listed first. So I think that, you know, the whole idea of setting out the single subject is to, if possible, distinguish between the various measures as early as possible.
Well, I'm inclined, I think, if we're going to find this to be a single subject, I'm inclined to agree with Ms. Hart that two measures can treat the same subject differently, and as long as the titles as a whole accurately convey that conflict between the measures, then the titles should be okay. Now, part of the problem is if we had a clear situation with that where, say, measure number one said affirmative action is prohibited, and measure two said affirmative action is perfectly okay, then what you might have is you could set kind of a general title that says, on both of them, that says an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning affirmative action, and that would apply to both of them. Or you could get more specific and on one say an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a prohibition on affirmative action, and on the other one saying concerning the preservation of affirmative action or something like that. The difficulty here is it's the conflict is a little bit more roundabout and not as clear, and we also, the title we set in 31 is of the more general sort. And having done that, it seems to me the best way we can avoid potential confusion is actually to signal to people that these are in some ways dealing with the same basic topic, and use the same language for the subject. 'Cause if we get overly specific with this one, then it may mislead either on the effect of this one or to the voter trying to compare the two. It may confuse them. So I would suggest that if we use the same single subject, it's accurate. It signals to voters that they've got two different approaches to a similar question and meets our statutory obligation, as long as Ms. Hart says, the rest of the title makes clear where the differences are. And I think that to the extent that we can, this and 31 do so. So my suggestion would be in the single subject, use the same language, essentially, or something very close, and then just go ahead with the substantive part.
I think that's a good idea. So shall we go ahead? Go ahead. We need somebody to lead us here.
Well, no, not me. So it just say an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state and in connection therewith, et cetera.
I think that's right. So strike right there, strike everything, basically, I think, through equal opportunity to persons, and substitute a prohibition.
Concerning a prohibition against discrimination. Oh, it says concerning a prohibition against discrimination by the state.
Yeah.
Prohibition of what?
But oh well, a prohibition against discrimination by the state. Then I think that's first part. Then is the same as number 31 until you get, I believe, until you get to the definition of preferential treatment. I'll go ahead and make that motion, move that change.
I can't make that motion.
No.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Hart, did you have other comments about the titles, the staff drafts? I couldn't remember if you said that this was the only concern you had.
Nope, that was the only concern I had.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Any other changes to the staff draft? If not, then is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
Move to adopt the staff draft for proposed initiative 2007-2008 number 82 as amended.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action number 82, and the time is 3:07 p.m. Thank you. The next agenda item is 2007-2008, number 84, approval of development permits. For the record, the time is 3:08 p.m. If we could hear first from the proponents, Mr. Hayes, if you would like to come forward, and we'll see if there's any questions from the board or if there's anything you need to tell us about the measure just to make sure we understand it.
My name is Dan Hayes, proponent of number 84. You may have noticed this is a mirror image, more or less, of 08-1141 House Bill, I should say. One slight difference, which you're in light of in your last sentence of the title. I was comparing your summary with the one that the General Assembly provides. And on line 4, it says proposed water supply is sufficient, and I'd like to add, and sustainable, the way they provide in their summary.
I'm sorry, are you talking, I wasn't fully paying attention. Were you talking about in the titles?
Yeah. Am I jumping the gun?
A little bit, but that's okay. Let me just catch up with you. What line number of the title?
Number 4.
Line 4.
It says proposed water supply is sufficient, and I'd like to add, and sustainable.
Okay, and you're saying that's from the bill summary for House Bill 08-1141?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, let's back up just a little bit, because I wanted to give the board an opportunity to see if there's any questions about the measure. And I guess, how close, I haven't looked at 1141. So is this exactly the same as 1141?
Almost. There's one, I changed the 50, I made a reference to housing units instead of, which is pretty minor. They just put 50 units or single family equivalents. Use 50 housing units with no equivalents phrase. The other thing is I added what you have at the starting with number 9. You got the engineer to determine if irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes are reasonably fulfilled and requiring such.
The titles add that phrase that's not in the bill summary for 1141? Is that what you're saying? You mean the provision has been...
It's not in 1141.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's...
Now, you're proposing this language as a constitutional amendment. 1141 is not a constitutional amendment.
No, it's a bill.
Okay. And 1141, again, I haven't looked at it. Would, in your measures, subsection 4 says legislation may be enacted to facilitate the operation of this section. Is that in 1141?
I've got a copy of it.
And it doesn't seem like that would be something that...
No, it wouldn't be part of a bill, I don't think. They retain that right, I guess, as well.
Okay. Well, and so in any event, you're saying though this is the language is almost the same as 1141, except that it's putting that language in the Constitution instead of in the statute.
The state engineer has to do.
Okay. Are there other questions from Mr. Hayes about the measure? Mr. Carton.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair, to your line of question. Mr. Hayes, the bill has an applicability clause that says that it applies to applications for development permits submitted on or after the effective date of the Act. The measure doesn't have that language. Is that correct? There's no applicability language. And I guess my question would be, is it your intent that this language apply to development permits submitted on and or after the effective date of the measure?
Applicability.
Yes. I guess this is a general question. The legislation specifies what development permits the bill applies to.
Oh.
The measure doesn't have any language.
There's a definition of housing units. Actually the federal definition. It's not in your proposal.
I think is the question
yeah,
is
on the last page it's got housing units.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm not being as artful, I guess, as I should in stating the question. The bill, well, let me just phrase it this way. Does this measure what development permits will this measure apply to? Will it apply to development permits applied for both prior to and after the passage of the measure if it passes, or will it only apply to development permits applied for after the effective date of the measure? Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I guess this is the time to ask this. So, the provision you mentioned about the last sentence in the title about requiring such the state engineer's letter, what is meant by the requiring such language? Is it that this letter will require somehow the state engineer, this measure gives authority to the state engineer to require irrigation priorities for agricultural purposes, or is this just recognizing already existing authority, or it's just that requiring such language that I just would like to get a little bit clearer in my head what that means.
For example, if Aurora wants to build, I don't think Aurora, say Brighton, wanted to build 13,000 houses the way Aurora seems to. And they're pulling it off the South Platte. Farmers are already strapped. They don't have enough, and that stream won't support that many new homes. That applicant would be turned off.
So if the state engineer determined that this housing development would require too much water to be taken away from agricultural purposes, the letter would effectively, unless the letter would effectively result in a denial of the permit, or maybe the developer could somehow augment their water somehow, would be the only way around that?
Right.
Okay.
Let's then go on to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Yeah, any discussion? I don't have anyone signed up to testify. Mr. Hayes, we're required to express the subject. The titles that we have, it's a pretty long subject, but I don't have any reason to believe that it's not a single subject. Are you comfortable with the description of the subject that appears in this in the staff draft? It's awfully long. It's like lines 1 through 5.
On 5, it says proposed development. Number 6. 1 through 5, the only problem I have is on line 4, proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable. That's what they use in the bill summary, and you use that same term on 8, line 8, determination of the sufficiency and sustainability of the water supply. So I think
What's the title of 1141? What's the... Mr. Carton has a copy. Concerning sufficient water supplies for land use approval?
Concerning sufficient water supplies for land use approval.
That's a pretty succinct statement of a single subject. Is that...
It would have the same subject, yes.
Okay. Well, in any event, like I say, the first question we need to vote on is whether or not the measure is a single subject. Is there any discussion by the board on that question?
All right, to me.
I agree with that. If there isn't any further, I'd move that the board find that proposed initiative 2007-2008, number 84, contains a single subject and proceed to setting a title for the measure.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's get back to the staff drafts and consider any changes. Mr. Hayes, you already indicated that I think you wanted to include on line 4, after sufficient, say sufficient and sustainable.
Even though it
looks like it's kind of repeated in line 8, but did you have a
bill summary here?
No, actually, Mr. Carton has a copy of the bill too. So thank you. But you're saying then with that change, it would track
on page line 8. It says determination of the efficiency and sustainability.
That's in the bill summary. That is in the bill summary.
No, that's in your title over here on line 8.
It's not in the bill. What you're saying, that phrase is not in the bill summary? Sorry, I'm getting confused, or I'm confusing you.
I'm just trying to make your title consistent.
Yeah.
Line 4 with line 8. Term sufficiency and sustainability are tied together. Because
okay.
It's one thing to have enough sufficiency in the spring when the runoff is high. Will it sustain in over a period of 10 or 20 years when you have these drought years? That's referred to in the Constitution, actually. Various parts of it, they talk about drought years, what do you do? And it's also considered in the bill. The sustainability is an average water supply over a period of 20 years. So it's an important part of the discussion.
I think that's a good change.
I think that's a worthwhile change in line 4.
Unless I'm missing something, Mr. Chairman, it's consistent with the text of the measure.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and move that change then on line 4 as Ms. Gomez is typing it into the title as it appears on the screen. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other suggested changes to the staff draft?
On line 6, it says, well, starting with 5 in the middle, requiring an applicant for a development permit to submit evidence regarding the developments, water supply to the local. I would like to suggest, instead of evidence, an engineer's report or a report regarding water supply. That's actually required. Evidence is doesn't sound very strong. People realize that what's actually required is an engineer's report. I think that's important, rather than just say evidence, because evidence sounds like, well, it doesn't sound as official that they're actually being required. do something substantial.
Remind me, I mean, the measure does require a report from a professional engineer. I think it requires a letter from the state engineer, and maybe a letter from the water supply entity. I mean, it sounds like there could be more than one thing that's required than just the engineer's report.
Yeah, that's actually in the summary. Letter from the state engineer commenting on the report by the professional engineer. Yes, you're right. Those three items.
In fact, really, there's a fourth. I see in paragraph E it says, and any other evidence deemed relevant by the local government. So
go ahead. I have a suggestion. Leave the beginning of that as it is, requiring an applicant for a development permit to submit evidence regarding the proposed development's water supply. Then I would put comma including, and then I'd start with an engineer's report, a letter from the state engineer, and, you know, maybe something like, if water is provided by a water supply entity, a letter from that entity, all affirming that the water supply will be sufficient and sustainable to support the development, or that the water supply will support the development. And then I think that's more specific. It does clearly lay out what's going on.
Could I suggest something?
Mm-hmm.
On line 9, where it says, "and requiring the state engineer to determine if irrigation water priorities and so on," at that point, state engineer 2, and insert review such report and further determine if irrigation water priorities. The way it sounds, that all the state engineer is doing is determining if irrigation water. So I'd like to insert the state engineer to insert review such report and further to determine if irrigation. That makes it clear what the state engineer is more properly doing. And then you could cut what's above that a little bit by just saying an engineer's report regarding the proposed development's water supply to the local government, because they're the one that's, the developer is submitting an engineer's report. Applicant for the development permit to submit an engineer's report. This wouldn't be the place where you can say about the state engineer, but down lower, you could say that the engineer would review such report and determine.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, that the list of things there is not really what the developer is required to supply, which is what that sentence is referring to. It's what the local government is supposed to consider in making its determination. So if you changed the line on 5 and 6 requiring an applicant for a permit to submit a professional engineer's report specifying that the local government shall base its determination on the engineer's report, on the state engineer's report, state engineer's letter, I don't know. I mean,
we may as well be a little more specific.
Pardon?
Well, I guess I would, a role or not, but I guess my question to Mr. Hayes is that with respect to the, modifying up here on the screen, the language after for a development permit to submit evidence, I think what Mr. Domenico is saying is that that after water supply on that line, or maybe even at the end of the clause, that we be more specific as to the types of reports and letters. Is that in the direction that the applicant wants to go? Because I'm not sure that more specificity here adds much. Right now we have on line 6 that they submit evidence regarding the proposed development water supply, which, as Mr. Hobbs pointed out, is a variety of documentation. And then in line 7 it says, specifying the evidence upon which the local government shall base its determination, which again sends the signal that there is this documentation, that there is some specification. And so I guess my question is that I'm amenable to go along to explore modifying the specifics on line 6 if that's the direction the proponent wants to go. Otherwise, I think I'm satisfied.
I think keep it brief. I would go with just evidence.
Okay.
It was just an engineer's report, base evidence. Going to balloon out into a whole lot of other things then.
Thank you.
The only other thing that I do have a problem is the way it says, stated beginning on the end of line 8, and requiring the state engineer to determine irrigation. It makes it sound like that's all he's doing. I just wanted to insert in there to review the evidence or the report, to review such report by the something in there, to show that he's not only, his job is a little more complex than just determining. His main purpose is to review everything that the developer submitted. That was his job up until I added this piece.
Yeah, so what if it just said requiring the state engineer to review the evidence submitted by the applicant and to determine and then go on from there?
That what the engineer does under the language of the measure?
Part of the bill is
commenting on the report.
State engineer commenting on the report
by
the professional engineer and determining whether the proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable.
I mean, you could either say requiring the state engineer to comment on the evidence submitted by the applicant or to review. They both. I think I'd be okay with either, but if
review and determine better.
Well, let me just ask. I think it is kind of problematic that we've got three things that the state engineer is supposed to do according to the measure, sort of. Comment on the report, determine if the water supply is sufficient, and determine if the irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes, et cetera. And we only mention one of those three things. But they're all things that are, all three are supposed to be in the letter from the state engineer, which in turn is one of the four things that the local government is required to consider, which falls under the evidence that's mentioned in the titles. I'm just wondering whether we need that detail.
Well, that was part of why I asked that question about what the requiring such meant, because it seems to me pretty important that effectively this gives the state engineer, if it determines that there's not sufficient water for the agricultural purposes, at least, to essentially tow it. So I think that the detail is pretty important. And I think there's an easy way to do it without adding much to what's already there, which would, if you want to keep all three, then it would be, you could change it to say something like requiring the state engineer to review or comment on the evidence supplied by the applicant and to determine if the proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable and if irrigation water priorities, and then just go on from there. That only adds 5 or 10 words and keeps in the fairly important role that the state engineer will be playing. Which currently the state engineer doesn't play a role like that.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Domenico, again, what was the suggestion?
The suggestion would be at the end of line 8, I guess, to say requiring the state engineer to review the evidence supplied by the applicant and to determine whether the proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable, and what I would probably change that if to whether, just for consistency. Not that one, the one at the right there. No, on line 10, at the end, I would write and whether.
Since the evidence supplied by the applicant determines whether the, and simply saying that he's reviewing what the applicant is submitting takes in the fact that the water is efficient, sustainable. Be up on water supply. The applicant has demonstrated, starting with 3, proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable, so I think you could almost assume that part of what he's reviewing is that evidence. That the he's reviewing the fact that the water proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable. I was just going to simply add that that he's reviewing the evidence supplied by the applicant and determining whether
either way. I kind of like it the way it is, that part of it. But
let me, if I may, just a couple of quick comments. The proposed language now on line 8 says requiring the state engineer to review the evidence supplied by the applicant. And I guess that refers to the part of the measure requiring the state engineer to comment on the report by the professional engineer? Or is that just because there's no specific provision? Is that just kind of, is that statement to review the evidence supplied by the applicant kind of a general statement rather than
the reason
taken from the text?
The reason I phrased it that way was because we basically decided not to refer earlier to the report from the engineer, the report from the professional engineer, right? If we had changed what we were talking about earlier to say requiring an applicant to submit a report from a professional engineer, then I would have said requiring the state engineer to review the report, the professional engineer's report supplied by the applicant. But it doesn't make sense to use that language since we haven't referred to the engineer's report previously. So that's why. And
I appreciate it. Yeah.
And the way the actual measure reads, I think it is only the professional engineer's report is the only thing the applicant is required to supply, and that other list in that's in subsection 2, and the list of things is what the local government is required to consider, which includes stuff beyond that. And so effectively the evidence supplied by the applicant will be the professional engineer's report. So,
And I appreciate the goal here for a little bit more specificity. Just to jump to the end, and we don't, and I don't know if I'm throwing this out there for as another option or just, I think, you know, given the fact that the engineer, the letter from the engineer, is one piece of the evidence that the local government uses in its determination. You know, another direction you could go here, and again, I don't know. I'm feeling that Mr. Hayes probably wants to talk about the state engineer in the trailer to the title here, but you know, another option would be to simply on line 8 delete everything after supply and put a period there, and then you've limited it to talking about the evidence and you're not going into specifics about one piece of evidence and leaving out another, the other two or three pieces. And when you have a, and I don't know whether or not this should go into the conversation, but when you have a bill title for a virtually identical measure that says concerning sufficient water supplies for land use approval, there's at least a straight face argument that maybe this title should be lean on the side of the more general rather than the specific, but that's just my comment. But I appreciate.
Yeah, and the reason I would think we should not go in that direction is partly because I think our titles should be a little bit more informative generally than legislative bill titles, since this is kind of what we're all that we give to the public, or not all, but what we as the title board give to them at least. And they don't have the benefit of all the staff that the legislature does. And in addition, going back to what I was asking about the requiring such, which is an addition to this that's not in the bill, is actually, it seems to me, pretty important and changes the state engineer's role from merely advisory to really having a veto over these developments. If the state engineer can require these applications to have priorities for
sufficient agricultural water supplies. That is, to me, pretty important change in the state engineer's role that should be signaled in the title.
Well, could we, I grant that that's true, and I think maybe that is significant that there the state engineer really does have something, a veto power with respect to that particular factor, and maybe that's significant, should be included. It's, on the one hand, I kind of prefer, as Mr. Carton was suggesting, to just rely on the fact that to say that the measure requires the applicant to submit evidence regarding the water supply, and not get into the specifics of what the professional engineer does and what the state engineer does and so forth, except maybe for this one thing. I mean, I can see that it maybe is a significant feature, and it's awkwardly worded. In the staff draft, the original staff draft, I mean, if it's a standalone thing, I mean, if, and I may be presuming a lot here, if you accept that it could be sufficient just to say requiring the applicant to provide evidence of the water supply, then you could next say requires the state engineer to make a determination that the irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes are reasonably fulfilled. The and requiring such is awkward, but if that's what it means, and it probably didn't sink into me earlier, if that's what it means, I wouldn't mind calling out that significant feature in one of the clauses in the titles. But I think sort of once you start talking about the other kinds of evidence that the local government is supposed to take into account, it seemed like you'd have to mention the professional engineer's report and so forth. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Yeah, I'd rather just keep it kind of simple. Specific kinds of evidence to me are not all that significant to the title.
Right. Well, we don't have any specificity in the current proposal as to what the local government is supposed to consider, but we have a bunch of specificity as to the state engineer, and maybe we should just go back to how it was at the beginning, which is to call out the one really important and maybe non-obvious thing that the engineer would be doing. I mean, maybe it is fairly obvious that if the state engineer is going to look at it, he'll be considering whether the supply is sustainable. And maybe the only really material thing is this substantive role of being able to require any plan to have to maintain irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes. And so maybe we go back to that, I think it requiring such is pretty confusing way of saying it, so maybe we can fix that.
It's hard to add anything else in, because if you did, now that I'm realizing, blanket and say, well, in requiring that, all this measure really basically what the bill is he reviews it and says, well, that's not enough, but he has no power to veto it. So.
Right, and so you want to say, you want to make it clear that the engineer, if he says there's not enough water for agricultural purposes, then you can't go forward. And that's a pretty significant change in the law. And maybe we should just, when we talk about the state engineer, just talk about that part. That really seems like the most important part of it as it relates to the state engineer. So then I guess the change would be requiring the state engineer to,
just interrupt with one thought that may impact your suggestion. The staff draft to me is kind of insufficient, and maybe you're about to correct this, but when it says requiring a state engineer to determine, as long as we're coming back to the requiring such, if there's a simpler way to say that really is an element, a required element.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I was thinking was instead of saying requiring the state engineer, say authorizing the state engineer to require that irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes be authorizing the state engineer to require applicants to establish that the development will, well, I don't know, to require that irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes will be reasonably fulfilled.
Mr. Garten?
If you said, and this may be the direction you were going with, and requiring that irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes are reasonably fulfilled as determined by the state engineer?
Or requiring a determination from the state engineer that irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes are reasonably fulfilled.
That's a pretty, I like that.
That's okay, maybe try that. Requiring stays the same. Well, and then after requiring, insert requiring a determination from, or of, I don't know, but from, requiring a determination from the state engineer, and then in line 9, strike. Let's see how to simplify. Just put in the word that. Then strike everything down towards the end of line 10 until you get to irrigation water priorities. And then strike in line 10 and requiring such. That take care of it?
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that then.
I'll move that change then. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft?
Did you still have a difficulty with the really long statement of the subject? Because one thing I was going to suggest was adopting the subject as it is in the bill and then moving kind of the bulk of that to the action part of the title would resolve that and maybe be a little clearer. And I forget what you said the bill's subject was, but something along those lines.
Concerning sufficient water supplies for land use approval as the title of the...
Yeah, something like...
I think what it is Water Sustainability, Supply and Sustainability Act.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
So if you said something like concerning a requirement of, and then sustainable water supplies for land use development, and in connection therewith, prohibiting a local government from approving an application, and just moving that part to after the single subject. I mean, it really would be just adding after concerning something similar to what the bill's title is, and moving what we currently have as a single subject to after in connection therewith, and then you have to change the tense of the verbs and stuff, but
could we? I don't know. Maybe I'm going down the wrong track here, but could we literally use the bill title for starters, concerning sufficient water supplies for land use approval?
Yeah, the only I would suggest including some sort of a requirement for concerning a requirement of sufficient, just something like that.
Okay.
That's
the bill summary requires a local government to make a determination as to whether an applicant for a state development has demonstrated that the proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable to serve.
Yeah, so I say we put that in and then put what he was just talking about, what the proponent was just talking about in the after the connection therewith.
Do you still want to say concerning a requirement, though?
Yeah, I think for some reason I think it's good that we discuss it in terms of a requirement or something like that, as opposed to just kind of the really idea behind it.
Okay, and this may be a little awkward then, but if we say concerning a requirement for sufficient water supplies for land use approval. Supplies for land use approval. And then.
I'm wondering if this actually does that, though. Does it actually require it? It requires the applicant to file a report, but does it actually require the local government to turn down the bill? It all boils down to the state engineer comments on it, and then. Where's the teeth in it? They require an applicant to file a report, but do they require the local government to say a requirement development has enough water before you can approve it? I don't know if that's actually in there.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the staff draft says concerning a requirement that prohibits a local government from approving an application, et cetera, et cetera. You're
saying what the measure says is it requires a local government to determine, after considering this stuff, that there's sufficient and sustainable water. And so, yes, I guess it's true that what they consider to be sufficient is not really. They could say, well, yeah, sure, this will deprive everyone of all this water, and there won't actually be enough to drink or bathe, but that's good enough for us. I guess they could end up doing that, but there is a requirement in here, but maybe it is actually a requirement concerning a requirement that local governments make a determination. About the sufficiency of water supplies for land use approval.
Well, yeah. I think it's accurate. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the upshot of this is that a developer doesn't get development permits unless he shows he's got a sufficient sustainable water supply. He doesn't get his or her development approved.
Certainly shouldn't.
Well, I guess it says a local government shall not approve.
Is that in there?
Yeah.
Well, right, unless it determines. I guess the question is, it's not.
The local government has to determine that there's sufficient and sustainable water, and the rest of the measure, correct me if I'm wrong, sets forth how that determination is made. Is that accurate?
I have a hard time deciding what's actually voluntary and what's required. I don't know if that still gives the local government the power to approve it anyway, or if they cannot.
Well, the one way that what's not really clearly defined in here, I think, is what it means for a water supply to be sufficient and sustainable to serve the peak monthly and yearly water supply requirements. And that part of it is left up to the local government, it seems to me. But that's pretty... I still think this is accurate. A requirement for sufficient water supplies, that is a requirement. How that's defined may leave some leeway for the local government to play around with how they define sufficient water supplies. So I think I'm okay with it as is.
All right. So maybe where the cursor is, can we put a comma and say "and in connection therewith"? I mean, and resume prohibiting or trying to figure out now how we, because I think the detail that's coming next is probably needed. So "and comma in connection." Thank you. Prohibiting a local government from approving an application.
Yeah, I think the only other change you need to make is a swapping the comma after development on line 6 to a semicolon.
I guess I'll move those changes.
I'll second those.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Okay. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the title? There a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended with the understanding the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause?
So moved.
Second. Yes, since we've made a bunch of changes, before we vote, I'll go ahead and read this the way the title would read. The title would be "An Amendment to the Colorado Constitution Concerning a Requirement for Sufficient Water Supplies for Land Use Approval, in connection therewith, prohibiting a local government from approving an application for a development permit that includes more than 50 housing units unless it determines that the applicant has demonstrated that the proposed water supply is sufficient and sustainable to serve the peak water supply requirements of the proposed development," semicolon. Requiring an applicant for a development permit to submit evidence regarding the proposed development's water supply to the local government, semicolon. Specifying the evidence upon which the local government shall base its determination of the sufficiency and sustainability of the water supply, semicolon. And requiring a determination from the state engineer that irrigation water priorities for agricultural purposes are reasonably fulfilled. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. And the motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 84, and the time is 4 o'clock.
I'm okay.
Okay, we'll keep going. The next agenda item is 2007-2008, number 85. Consumer Protection, Complementary and Alternative Health Care. Let's first hear from proponents, if we could. If you'll introduce yourself for the record, and we'll, if you have any general comments you'd like to make, go ahead.
My name is Kim Green. I don't have any general comments.
Okay. Are there any questions about the measure for the proponents? One question, I don't know whether this is a question or what, but on the bottom of the first page, there's a citation to Colorado Statute Title 12-36-106 point or period paren B.
Yes.
I think that should be that the period should not be there, and that a paren 1 should probably appear in its place, but I don't know that. It's odd. It looks odd to me to have that a period there, and I did not bring the statute with me. I think I had looked at. You looked at it, but it just seemed to have a period in that place just looks odd.
When I did this, it's 12-36-106, period, and then I did the B in quotations. So if you would like to take that period out, because I've got part of the statute right here, if you'd like to take that period out, if that's how it would look from a technical perspective, that's fine.
Well, I suspect it should be 106 paren 1 paren B. I mean, not just take the period out, because the numbering system for the statutes involves after the three-part number 12-36-106, which identifies the title, the article, and the section, then the next level is a Arabic numeral, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, mm-hmm. and the next level below that is A, B, C, D, E. So I don't know.
Oh, so it would be yes. I think it's you're correct. It would be 106 point. Parentheses 1, in parentheses, and then parentheses B, in parentheses. That how you're looking at
that? That would follow the numbering convention that I would expect.
I have it right here if you'd like to look at it.
The statute? I mean, it is, maybe that would be helpful, because I don't even know that we can change it.
Because I failed to put this in. I'm not a lawyer, sorry. So I failed to put this in, so it's 106. I failed to put this in, and then it goes to B.
Okay, so then, if you don't mind me borrowing that for a second, that I think that makes sense, because 1B refers to, I mean, this is under the definition, subsection 1 is the definition of practice of medicine. 1B refers to suggesting, recommending, prescribing, or administering any form of treatment, et cetera, which is the quote that follows that citation. Maybe that is something that if the proponents would like for us to change, we could accept that change in the text. Okay. I guess then I would move that we strike the bottom of the first page, 106 point paren B, and substitute 106 paren 1 paren B.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion carries 3-0. Further questions about the measure? I don't think I have any.
Do you think that the first part of the title of the staff draft of the title accurately reflects what you consider to be the subject, the basic purpose of the measure, which is to address the right of alternative and complementary health care practitioners to practice in Colorado free of governmental oversight if such practice complies with minimal standards?
I think that for clarification, because alternative and complementary health care practitioners can apply to so many different, that we had put in it includes, but it's not limited to, engaging in traditional cultural and complementary or alternative health care that utilizes, but it's not limited to, lifestyle counseling, nutrition, and others. Utilize the body's own mechanisms to reach homeostasis. I think that if something more definitive was put in here for the public, then they would understand what we were talking about.
Okay.
And also, as far as your question, in Colorado, or healthcare practitioners to practice in Colorado free of governmental oversight, I think that it should be to practice in Colorado legally and free of governmental oversight, because right now it is illegal for complementary practitioners to practice.
So you were suggesting a bit more specificity, but I guess before we get that, I don't have a single subject issue, and maybe we should just do that and then move on.
That's a good idea. I think, let's just go ahead and decide whether the measure applies with a single subject requirement. I don't think I have an issue with that.
Neither do I.
I guess I'll just go ahead and make a motion then that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Okay, then let's turn to the staff drafts. We're starting to touch on that. And Ms. Gomez has displayed the staff draft on the screen in the room. And as Mr. Domenico was calling attention to the first part of the staff draft, in which the board is required to clearly express the single subject. I think the question is that a fair expression of the single subject concerning the right of alternative and complementary health care practitioners to practice in Colorado free of government oversight, et cetera, up until you get to and in connection therewith. That's the phrase that the staff draft identifies as the single subject. And then the remainder after the and in connection therewith, everything else is intended to list the main features of the measure. So,
I think right before, on that particular question, right before to practice in Colorado, I feel that to really qualify what this law is trying to do, to say legally and free of governmental oversight. So it would be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the right of alternative and complementary health care practitioners to practice in Colorado legally and free of governmental oversight if such practice complies with minimum standards.
Is it? I'm trying to weigh in my own mind whether that's really necessary, given that it does go on to say free of government oversight. I mean, if it would have to be legal if it's free of government oversight, wouldn't it?
Well, I think that what we've run into in talking with this issue for the last 4 years is consumers don't realize that alternative medicine is illegal in the state of Colorado. So I think to really define that for them within the title, would better help them understand what the issue truly is. Most people are shocked when they find out that alternative medicine is illegal.
I think it's fine to put it in there. I mean, it's
okay.
It's maybe redundant, maybe not, but I don't think it's inaccurate. So,
Jesse, why don't you go ahead and insert that?
Legally and free.
Is that correct? Legally and?
So my other question, suggestion, related to the other idea of including a bit more specificity about what qualifies as alternative and complementary healthcare practitioner, and my suggestion was perhaps in the and maybe it's not necessary. My suggestion was if we do that, or even if we don't, to qualify in the first line the right of alternative and complementary healthcare practitioners to, and just qualify that by using the weasel word certain, concerning the right of certain alternative and complementary, et cetera, and then later on explaining who the certain ones are and maybe aren't. But maybe that may not be necessary. And so I just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, it's a good question. I think we could, I'd suggest maybe leaving it out, because the term, you know, alternative and complementary healthcare practitioners, I mean, it does ask, you know, kind of what that is, and I think later we at least say defining the term in line four, but...
Yeah, that's fine.
So perhaps... which includes, but it's not limited to, and then just giving some of those small examples right here. That particular. Have is, it's very lengthy, though. Sorry.
Like what kind of person?
I'm a wordy person.
Oh. Well, we are required by statute to be brief, even though we don't seem to ever be brief. But
So what I have down is those engaging, you know, included but not limited to those engaging in traditional, cultural, and complementary or alternative healthcare that utilizes, but is not limited to lifestyle counseling, nutrition, or forms of healing.
Well, that's short for our usual practice. That's
Isn't
not
it?
Even, that's only one or two lines.
Okay, yeah, you can do better than that.
I think that's a good idea, actually, to give some hint about what we're talking about is probably smart.
So do you want me to, like, state what I have here?
Sure, if you do want to start with that. And go slow enough so that Ms. Gomez can kind of type it into
the... And then you can, like,
okay.
Okay. All right. So, right after practitioner, which includes, but is not limited to, comma, engaging in traditional, comma, cultural, comma, complementary, comma, or alternative healthcare. That utilizes, comma, but is not limited to, lifestyle counseling. Yeah, that utilizes, comma, but is not limited to, lifestyle counseling, comma, nutrition, comma, and other natural forms of healing that utilize the body's own mechanisms to reach homeostasis. And there is one other thing that that I would suggest putting in here. We don't want to give alternative practitioners like just a carte blanche check to go out and do whatever they want. And many times the public, when they hear this kind of thing, they look at it. But in our actual specifications and parameters that we set forth, we show that they can't, it doesn't include surgery, puncturing of the skin, or prescribing legend drugs. And I think that without that, the public could construe that this particular title gives that freedom to those alternative health practitioners, because it really doesn't show parameters as to what people can and cannot do.
So that would be in that next bit there, we've
yeah.
got accepting certain practices, that you'd want to include some specificity there about what's accepted. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, actually underline, I think maybe underlying 12 or perhaps where you're stating accepting certain practices from the purview. Yeah, probably after line 5, and does not include surgeries, comma, puncturing of the skin, comma, or prescribing legend drugs. So that way the public really knows that they are going to be protected under this particular amendment.
Mr. Garten.
Just a comment, and I appreciate your help on this. It seems to me that the language that you are using for an alternative and complementary health care practitioner comes from the kind of the statement of intent in the measure in paragraph B, and I'm looking at paragraph B, the last sentence. Healing and health care practices performed by alternative and complementary health practitioners include, but are not limited to, engaging in traditional, cultural, etc. Okay? But there's also a definition of this term in subsection 2 of the measure that's, I guess where I'm going is that if I would be more inclined to track the definition in the measure than kind of the statement of intent. And you know what? I think it may be briefer than the language that you have up there, and you can get the exception language as part of it. So I hope you understand where I'm going with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I do understand.
What we've usually done, for example, is say, defining alternative and complementary healthcare practitioner to mean, and then plug this language in, and it tracks the substantive language of the measure.
I know that in the past, in talking with people, the first thing they ask, because when you give the definition. We made it fairly broad, but we wanted to give an example of such. Means those persons practicing normal and natural healing acts, which support and stimulate a person's inherent self-healing process, they just kind of look at you blankly and say, "Well, what does that mean?" And so I think that to put that in there with "and does not include surgeries, puncturing of the skin, or prescribing legend drugs," I think that would be a very, very good place to put it. As long as we gave them some kind of an example of what we're talking about, as far as like nutritional counseling and that kind of thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't have that in there. So, if we could use the definition such as you're suggesting, but then also give some kind of an example, because the definition is fairly broad, so that way the public does understand which practitioners we're talking about. Does that make sense? I mean,
I guess I would invite comment from the board. I'm locked into my drafting, narrow-minded.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about putting in the definition on subsection 2. But if we could maybe add a small intent after that subsection 2 as to what practices it would pertain to. So that way, you know, it allows for the drafting to be proper according to how you say you're locked into it. But then it also gives an example that the general public might understand more readily.
I guess I'd how the board feels about that.
I think I agree with you that the starting point should be the definition. And I suggest that we put something up there along the lines of what Mr. Carton suggested, and then see if there's a way to make it work with an example, because I agree that the definition is not much more specific than just saying alternative and complementary health care. But it does allow you to easily get in the exceptions, what it doesn't cover, and it is actually an accurate representation of what the measure's doing. So that's where I would start.
So maybe, Ceci, if I understand where we're going up on line four, after defining alternative and complementary healthcare practitioner, after the quote, insert to mean.
Right.
Mr. Carton's suggestion. I mean, some of this language we may or may not be picking up again later, so I say to mean. Those persons practicing normal and natural healing. Normal and natural healing acts which support and stimulate a person's inherent person's self-healing process. Hyphenate self-healing. And then we've got the definition then says it doesn't include surgeries, puncturing, drugs, chiropractic that we could work in there at that point. I'm sorry, I'm muttering. do we just keep on going?
After process, you want me to put and does not include?
I think so. I mean, unless somebody's... Okay. It does not include surgeries, comma, puncturing of the skin, comma. I'm wondering if we can shorten this. Instead of putting in the or, prescribing legend drugs or chiropractic adjustments. I'm prescribing legend drugs, comma, or chiropractic. Well, it says chiropractice.
I spell checked.
That's a word?
No, chiropractic.
Oh.
Yeah, when I saw that today, I was like, wow, I missed that.
Fooled me.
Sorry.
Chiropractic.
I think so. Chiropractic.
Yeah, no E on the end.
Yeah. Adjustments.
I guess I'm supposed to formally request the correction of the language itself. There we go.
And that's just a correcting of the spelling, and I think that's something we can authorize at your request. I guess I would move that change.
To the measure, right?
To the measure. Changing the language of the
measure. I second that.
Any discussion? If not, all is in Mr. Hartcard.
I don't know if this is appropriate, but a conforming amendment to that on line 10 and 11, striking the language accepting certain practices from the purview of alternative and complementary health care. Isn't that a conforming?
I'm sorry, striking the rest of that?
Yeah, on line 10, strike accepting certain practices from the purview of alternative and complementary health care, because I think that...
The motion I meant to second had simply to do with amending the the actual language of the measure to fix a typo. I'm not even close to being prepared to deal
fix
with
it.
The
I guess I'm
title
totally
yet.
Voting.
Yeah, we did take a detour there. So apart from what you see on the screen.
Okay.
the motion is to amend the measure to permit a change in the text of the measure in subsection 2, end of the fourth line, to change the spelling of the word chiropractic to just to drop the E.
And that's what I seconded.
And let me, I have one other motion after that before we get back to the staff draft, I think. But if there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. While we're at it, as far as the text of the measure, on the first page, at the end of paragraph B, it refers to other natural forms of healing that utilize the body's own mechanisms to reach homeostasis. And I think that should be body apostrophe S. And I don't know whether I'm getting too deep into this, but I think that's what's intended here. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is what is intended. You can, if I can formally, like, ask you to change that.
Okay, I guess I'll move that change to strike the word bodies, B-O-D-I-E-S, substitute bodies, B-O-D-Y, apostrophe S.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? No. Oh, I'm sorry. No. And that motion carries 3-0. But is it clear that? Oh yeah, we're okay. We've now done those two changes, separate motions. I'm getting confused what we're voting on too. Okay, Mr. Carton.
Well, then I would offer that there are a number of places in the measure where I think you meant to say statute and you said statue. And the first one that I noticed was in paragraphs, I think you meant to say statute, common mistake. Paragraph C on the first page, the fourth line where it says state statue.
Yeah. Sorry, I had the flu when I put this together, and we had to have it here that day. So
there's
yes, it was statute.
And there's another one in subsection 2. And I guess my motion would just be that wherever the word, because I don't think, and it's on paragraph C on the
first page. No, it was supposed to be statute.
Yeah, throughout?
Yeah, throughout.
Then my motion would be that wherever the word statues appears in the measure, it'd be changed to statutes, S-T-A-T-U-E-S. Chairman, but consistent with kind of this line of.
I'll second that motion for discussion. So Mr. Carton, so you even though it's statute, in this example, statute singular, you would change that to statutes?
So be no. The first one I'm looking at in paragraph C, it says may be interpreted under Colorado State statute. So it will be Colorado State statutes.
Plural. Okay.
Yes.
And similarly, wherever statue or wherever statute appears, the motion is to change it to the plural statutes.
Yes.
No, that's not right. It's to change statue, the object, the carving, to statute. Because there are a number of places where it shouldn't be plural. I mean, like in section 2, it refers to Colorado statute title 12.
Well, we could take them up on it. I think the first one, Colorado State statute, as being illegal, I think it's appropriate to say Colorado State statutes as being illegal.
Either way is
okay.
Fine with me.
Either way. And then in subsection 2, about the middle of the paragraph on page 2 there, articles 29 to 43 of the Colorado statute, I would say that should be statutes. Title 12. And then on the third page of the measure in paragraph C, fourth line down, relevant Colorado statutes should be statutes. And so I guess that would be, those are the three places I know of, and it would seem appropriate that statue or statues in each of those spots be changed to statutes.
Can I go on the record to say that I know it was statute?
Yeah. That's what happens.
He's surprised.
Yeah, I must have hit, like, change all on my spell check or something. God.
So the motion, and it's been seconded, is to make those three changes. If we see any others later, we can think about them, if that's okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Should we return to the titles? What we've done is include the definition and the exceptions, and then I think there's a question then about whether another question would be, and we haven't voted on that yet, but related to this was whether or not we include any examples from the legislative declaration.
Can we clean this up a little bit first?
Okay.
I think if the way it reads now, we should add an S to practitioner on line 4, which is how the measure reads, and also we're sort of plural. And then that semicolon should go away. And then we've got a shift in the sense of the verbs from, or the description there is talking about persons, and then when we get into the exceptions, we start talking about practices. It either needs to, either we need to say we're defining alternative and complementary health care to mean normal and natural healing acts and take it away from practitioners as persons practicing these acts, or we need to, in the second part where we talk about does not include, we need to say does not include persons performing surgeries, puncturing of the skin. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It doesn't quite make sense the way it is now. Or I sort of liked the way it was originally dealing with the exceptions, in the sense of I would suggest we say defining practitioners to mean, and go there through process on line 6, and then a semicolon, and then you could either then include examples if we're going to do that, or jump straight into accepting certain practices and say accepting from the purview, from the definition of alternative and complementary health care, surgeries, puncturing of the skin, as kind of a separate thing, or get rid of practitioner and just refer to what healthcare is. I know that the measure is stated in terms of practitioners, but I don't know. I don't think it's misleading in any or material that the definition is of practitioners rather than of the subject matter, and it might be easier to write if we say defining alternative and complementary healthcare to mean normal and natural healing acts, et cetera, et cetera, but not to include surgeries, puncturing of the skin. And then if you wanted to, you could do a semicolon and providing examples of alternative and complementary health care as, and then what we've got. But
so just to take that in steps, leave it as it is down to line 6, and just so I understand, Mr. Domenico, after you would put a semicolon. Which direction do you want to go? I'm with you. I just don't know how you want to do it. If
there's two ways, it seems to me, and I wonder if it's more accurate to the one way would be to leave it as is and without a semicolon and after process say and not to include the persons performing surgeries, puncturing of the skin, etc. The only reluctance I have to doing it that way is there could be people who do both, it seems to me, and by referring to persons as opposed to the practices, but maybe that's just not a relevant consideration, that so maybe I would just suggest that the cleanest way to do it for now is to not put a semicolon there, to go to and say and does not include persons performing surgeries, puncturing of the skin.
I could do that, or would this do it? Yeah, on line 5, it says which support and stimulate. What if in line 6, after and, you put a which? So that it would read, to mean those persons practicing normal and natural healing acts, which support and stimulate, and which does not include. Is that better, worse, different? In the alternative, what you're proposing is for openers is to say on line 6, and not
I
to
I see what you're saying.
Include.
The only I would then I think maybe change the word include and which do not involve or something like that, because then you're referring, the which is referring to acts and which do not involve. So for one thing, it's got to be a plural subject, so it would have to be in which do not involve.
And then just again to take this to take it in steps, and then on line 7 after adjustments put a semicolon.
Yeah,
would that
I think
be the first part? Call that part 1?
Yes.
I think it looks fine.
Okay. And then we got to decide if we want to include the examples, I think. And the way to do that, I think, would be to say providing, if we wanted to, just to say providing examples of natural, alternative and complementary health care as including lifestyle counseling, nutrition, and other natural forms of healing. What's homeostasis mean?
Homeostasis? It's basically where the body can get really ill, like when I had the flu and I wrote this. And I was not in a homeostatic place. because so the body can either be very, very ill, right, or it can be very healthy. And homeostasis is kind of right in the middle. It's like it's a balanced place where, you know, everything's just grooving right along.
Cool.
All right. So, does that help?
Sure. Sounds good. So that would be my suggestion is you could, if we want to include examples, to say we're providing examples. Which I don't know, it does make it longer, it's probably not necessary. But if the proponents want it in there, and it's accurate, I don't think it adds a huge amount to the length of it. I mean, I'm one of the people who would probably be a little confused and wonder what we're talking about if we don't include some of the examples. So that would be the way I could be talked out of it, but the way I would suggest it is right there where we are, just say providing examples of alternative and complementary healthcare practices, as including, and then go to traditional. Or actually, I probably would go down all the way down to as including lifestyle counseling, nutrition, and other natural forms of healing. Or we could delete all the rest of that.
His suggestion about including it, but then going down to lifestyle counseling and nutrition as far as like giving some examples.
So yeah, it would be right there, say providing examples of alternative and complementary healthcare as including, and then delete everything down to lifestyle counseling on line 9. You could also seems to me end that clause after healing without losing too much, but you could also leave it in. I don't know.
No, you don't have to leave in homeostasis just because you don't have to leave in homeostasis. You could put in healing.
I think that would be good. We had earlier on in line 5, I think we talked about stimulating self-healing.
I actually get that question a lot. What does homeostasis mean?
Yeah, then I'd put a semicolon there after healing. And then I think we can get rid of the whole next clause, right? About accepting certain practices, because we already talked about that. All the way through healthcare. Now, up on line 9, the healthcare on line 9. Yeah, there.
Mr. Garden?
I'm good with kind of the example language starting in parts on page, on line 7. I think you could probably even say specifying that alternative and complementary health care includes, but and save a couple words, but I think the providing examples is fine.
I'm sorry, say that again, Mr. Carton.
I'm fine with the language on line 7 that begins providing examples.
Uh-huh.
I'm not inclined to urge a change. I think a possible alternative would be to say specifying that alternative and complementary health care includes. I don't think that would be inaccurate. It might save a word or two, but I'm fine with the way it is.
I actually like the way it is, just because if you start giving these are just examples, that to me makes it sound like this is all it would cover.
Yeah, I think if you did go that direction, you'd probably end up wanting to put back in the "but is not limited to" language,
yeah.
And then you lose the whole. I don't have any other issues with the rest of it. So
I don't know if it's appropriate. I'd move to change the amendments to the staff draft. I don't know if all of them.
I don't know what we've done by motion anymore, but we'll just the motion is all of the changes shown on the screen to the staff draft.
Can I ask one question? On line 3, it talks about minimum standards. The word standards, in as far as what you guys look at that to mean, what would that convey to you? Because really we're not asking for minimum standards, we're asking for set parameters.
Well,
I mean, can that be construed as both?
Yeah, I mean, to me, when I read standards is kind of a open-ended term that basically means to me that this isn't going to mean that there's no rules that apply to these people, and if they kill someone in the process of doing whatever it is they do, that may fall below the minimum standards, even though we've said that you're basically free of governmental oversight, that it's qualified a little bit, but it to me doesn't imply any kind of anything specific other than that. I think it gives enough of a signal to voters that there's some standards. If they're concerned about what exactly those are, that it's up to them to look at the measure itself, is sort of how I read that.
I just wanted to understand that particular phrase.
That's the way I understand it. Is that the way you understand the measure?
That's how I understand it.
Okay. So I think the motion is the changes to the staff draft. I think it was seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And if there are no other changes to the staff draft, then is there a motion to adopt? Maybe we just did this. Motion to adopt the staff draft as amended, with the understanding the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause below what is now line 17.
So moved.
Second.
Do I need to read it into the record?
Not for me.
I think I'll omit it. I think we exceeded the maximum or the minimum or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to read it. So if there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 85. And the time is 4:50 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. That's us.
So we'll take our regular dinner break now at this time.
You're at 7.
Yep. Yep, I think we'll just keep going. And the next agenda item is 2007-2008, number 89, attorney fees. We could hear first from a representative of the proponents. We'll find out if there's any questions about the measure from the board. Mr. Gessler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hobbs. For the record, my name is Scott Gessler. I'm with the law firm Hagstaff Gessler and represent the two proponents in this matter. Submit that the wording is pretty straightforward. I'm hopeful that it's easily understood by anyone who reads it. You know, the single subject is that it essentially regulates contingent fees charged by attorneys. So the subject is one concerning contingent fees, and each section is closely connected to that, or I should say, merely implements that main subject. I'm happy to answer any questions. Or if the board would like me to make a longer presentation, I'm happy to do that as well. I'm mindful of the time of the evening here.
Could we have a long presentation, please?
If you'll excuse me, I'll reach over for my telephone book and start reading.
Let's see. Any questions?
In general, or are we on single subject, or?
I was thinking about the measure first, but a question about the measure, Mr. Gessler. This is a statutory change, new section 1372.04, bottom of the third page. Subsection 4 says, or requires a two-thirds vote for the first 10 years after this measure for the legislature to change this.
Yes, let me address that. In legislative comment, we discussed that matter as well, and they pointed out helpfully that it's difficult to bind the legislature through statute because the legislature can always change the statute through majority vote. And we understand that. Effectively, and we conceded it there, and we'll certainly concede it here, effectively cannot require the legislature to require a two-thirds vote. But it is an expression of voter intent that this should only be changed with a two-thirds vote. Our hope is that the legislature will heed that expression of intent. But from an effectiveness standpoint, by operation of law, in fact, does not have an effect.
Okay. Thank you. Then let's move on to the question of single subject compliance. Questions or comments or discussion? Mr. Domenico?
Do you have any concern at all, as I sort of do, that the first two sections, the informed consent, the disclosure requirements, could be considered a different subject from the subsection 2, the limitation on fees? And if not, do you have any good precedent for explaining why not?
I'm sorry, the first two sections?
Right. I mean, it seems to me that substantively you're doing, as you said, there are two major components to this, right? There's the informed consent disclosure, and then there's also a substantive limitation that basically takes away the right of attorneys and potential clients to establish their own contractual agreements for how to be paid, right? And do you have any concern, or why should I not be concerned that those are two subjects?
Well, I don't have any concern, obviously, as the proponent here. And the reason why is it's the definition of a single subject is whether or not, the violation of a single subject or the definition of a single subject, either side of the coin, is things that are connected to or dependent upon one another. And these are clearly connected to a single subject. You know, and the subject is the regulation of contingent fees, essentially protecting consumers. And it does it through informing consumers and providing substantive protections as well. And I think that this is easily one subject, the subject of contingent fees. It's not as if there's a limitation on car sales commissions or anything like that. I mean, they're very closely connected to here are your contingent fees and here are the limitations on the contingent fees. And so the informational aspect of it is closely bound with the actual limitation on it.
Do you I mean, I think I agree with you. I mean, I'm going to vote in favor of it. It just does seem that these are two sort of important substantive changes. Or am I wrong? Is it really that the substantive change is really the limitation on fees, and the other part's just kind of making sure that that works out and everyone kind of knows the rules? Or
I think that's a fair characterization. Although I will, you know, be straightforward in the sense that the informational aspect does contain its own enforcement provision. So I think in that sense it would be, however one wants to define substantive, it does have some meaning there. And I would also point out that, I mean, perhaps one of the ironic points of the single subject requirement is oftentimes the more complex or the muddier an initiative is, the easier it is to pass single subject, because we sort of create this broad overarching subject. Whereas perhaps I'm being overly cynical, the clearer and better written initiatives the simpler ones have sometimes draw more single subject scrutiny. So, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the emphasis on this is the limitation on fees, and that the informational aspect, the requirement to provide information to ensure that there's an informed consumer, you know, helps bring that to fruition, helps enact that limitation on fees. But the truth is, there are also specific enforcement provisions for failure to inform clients and failure to inform legal.
Seems to me that it's a single subject. I mean, there's that the staff draft characterizes as concerning contingency fees, and is that a fair characterization?
I think it is, and I understand the necessity of this board to carefully consider all these matters. But
yeah,
my opinion is that this is a very straightforward single subject.
I guess I'll go ahead and move that the board find that the measure is a single subject and proceed to set titles.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's proceed to the staff drafts, which Ms. Gomez has displayed on the screen in the room. Mr. Gessler, any comments about the staff draft?
I do. I have several comments on it. And I'll put them in sequential order here. On line 3, the phrase "to the claimant," I think is probably unnecessary detail. An attorney who is retained by a claimant on a contingency basis to disclose to the claimant, I'd almost argue that it's sort of obvious that it's going to be disclosed to the claimant as opposed to published in a newspaper.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So that's the first. The second is, continuing along line 3, certain information regarding, and then the phrase, the claimant's representation. I'd argue that that's slightly overbroad. Really what it is, it's certain information regarding attorney fees. The disclosures are pretty much limited to attorney fee arrangements, not overall representation, such as the subject and the sequencing of a particular representative matter, or things along those lines. So I would propose removing the phrase "to the claimant" in line 3, and I would also propose substituting the phrase "attorney fees" for the phrase "the claimant's representation." My third comment, continuing along line 4, where it begins the second word in line 4, "and the claimant's right to receive certain information regarding the claimant's representation in writing," I would propose deleting that entire phrase. That's part and parcel of one of the types of certain information that should be proposed. I don't think it's necessary to specify each type of the certain information, and that's a particularly long and almost contorted way to do that. Continuing along line 5, beginning with the fourth word, creating, the phrase "creating a private cause of action for a client," I think that, although as attorneys we all understand exactly what a private cause of action is, I suspect that the non-attorneys, very few of them, would really understand just what the heck that means. And I think a much simpler and more straightforward language would be to substitute the word "allowing" for creating a private cause of action for a client. So it would creating a private cause of action for. So that phrase would read, allowing a client to sue his or her attorney if the attorney fails to disclose the specified information. After that next comma, I would propose putting the word and. And then at the very, and then my final proposal at the two-thirds of the way through line 7, where it begins, and requiring a two-thirds majority vote of the General Assembly to amend the provisions in the proposed initiative for 10 years, I would completely delete that phrase. The reason I would delete that phrase is I think by operation of law, this initiative does not do that. It's certainly an expression. I also think it's a relatively minor part of the overall initiative. So much of my commentary involves deleting a couple, I shouldn't say much, deleting a few phrases and simplifying a few others. And those are proposals. I'm happy to go over them again as we discuss.
It sounded to me like they all were pretty good. I think if it's okay with the other members, perhaps we could go ahead and Ms. Gomez has been trying to keep up with some of them, but if we could go back over them and make sure we've got them on the screen the way you've proposed them.
Sure. I apologize, I wasn't following.
That's okay. So in line 3, we've stricken to the claimant.
And I would also strike the claimant's representation. Simply include and substitute attorney fees. I think the standard usage is attorney fees, not attorney's fees, although I have seen it used both ways. I think normally it's attorney fees.
Okay.
And then attorney fees, and then I would simply strike the entire portion beginning with the next word and claimant's right to receive certain information regarding the claimant's representation in writing. I would strike that entire clause. Strike the next clause, substitute the word allowing, which you have. On current line 6, fourth word from the end, the word limiting, just before limiting, I would add the word and. Going directly below that, the next and, line 7, yeah, the word basis, I'd substitute a period for that, both striking everything.
Then in line 4 after attorney fees, is there a semicolon there? I think there should be. Or a comma.
Either a semi. Yeah, if it's a comma, that would make sense with the and limiting in line 7. If it's a semicolon.
Whatever we've got, I don't have any preference.
If it's a semicolon, then the one before and on line 6 should be changed to a semicolon also.
Yeah, I agree for consistency. I think either one works.
Yeah, since there's not a series in here, I think we could use commas, but okay. It doesn't matter.
Let's use commas then instead of semicolons.
I think those are all good changes as far as I'm concerned. I have a couple other thoughts.
Okay.
If we're ready.
Sure. Do they relate to these, or should we do a motion?
No. They don't relate to these, but they're, not really.
I guess I'll just go ahead then move these changes as shown on the screen. That's seconded by Mr. Carton. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Domenico.
The first one I had was we kind of go back and forth between claimant and client, and the measure talks about claimants, right? And just wonder if claimant's just a weird word, I think, and I don't know if it needs to be in there because that's a defined term. Or if something a little more straightforward like client would work in this context. That was one thought. And if we do leave claimant at the beginning, whether on line 5 we need to change it. I don't think we do, but I just thought I would bring that out.
I think using the term client consistently makes sense. Yeah, claimant is a defined term. You're not required to obviously include every defined term or mimic that.
Is there any reason that using client would be inaccurate?
Well, every claimant that hires an attorney is also a client.
Right.
And I think the way claimant is defined pretty much include everyone who hires an attorney on a contingency fee basis because they're claiming something.
That's what I thought.
So I think you're right. I think client would probably be a little bit better. I didn't catch that myself.
So I guess there's now only that one reference to claimant, I think, in line 2. There used to be one or two more. And so I would change that to client.
I'll move that, or do you want to...
No, that's fine. We can do that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
You know, I had one more little thing and then maybe one semi-big thing. The small one was on line 7, I'm starting to reconsider, where it says the amount of attorney fees an attorney may receive. I wondered if the first attorney was redundant and unnecessary. Which itself is a redundant phrase, redundant and unnecessary. maybe attorney fees distinguishes it from some other kind of payment that an attorney could receive that isn't covered by this, and so maybe we should keep it in there. I don't know.
Any preference?
I'd say that editor after my own heart. I think attorney fees and attorney fees. So I don't think the first attorney is necessary.
All right. Then I move that we delete that reference to attorney.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
So my last question thought is the limit on fees is a pretty big deal. And while this is a nice short title, I wonder if the limit should go first. Me, the limit is at least as important as the disclosures. In terms of the actual effect it's going to have on the practice of law and people's relationship with attorneys, I was thinking that might maybe should go first after in connection therewith.
No objection to that.
If there's no objection, then I think we should do it. And so then I would take the last clause limiting the amount of fees an attorney may receive on a contingent fee basis and move it to immediately after in connection therewith. Then you gotta get rid of and after basis, put a semi, or no, comma. At commas, and then period there after on line 7, and I gotta put an and in somewhere. I think before allowing, there has to be an and.
And if I may, a period after information. if that's not there already, I can't quite see that. Okay. Step ahead.
That was all I had. So we're ready. I'd move that we make that change.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Carton.
One comment or observation that the measure appears to allow a civil claim in connection with failure to disclose and a civil claim to recover fees in excess of the limits contained in the measure. So it provides, and I'm looking at paragraph F and G on page 2 of the measure.
If there's willful or wanton behavior.
And just as a comment, the title as written talks about the client's ability to sue for failure to disclose, but it doesn't talk about the ability to bring an action to recover fees in excess of the limit. Is that accurate?
That would be correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Any other changes to the staff draft? Anybody else present want to comment on the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended with the understanding the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that now begins on line 11? Is there a motion to adopt staff draft as amended?
I second that.
Then it would read, if that motion is adopted, an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning contingent attorney fees, in connection therewith, limiting the amount of fees an attorney may receive on a contingent fee basis, requiring an attorney who is retained by a client on a contingent fee basis to disclose certain information regarding attorney fees, and allowing a client to sue his or her attorney if the attorney fails to disclose the specified information, period. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 89. The time is 5:14 p.m. Thank you all.